Well, good morning, everyone. This is the Imago Nutrition Podcast, where we answer your questions and give practical nutrition strategies to help you and your family flourish. I am here with Mark today, and we are going to talk about ways to boost your energy, improve focus and alertness, and maybe foster some better sleep. So we're going to get into that. And if you have a question that you would like us to answer or feature on one of our episodes, go to imagonutrition.com/podcast. So imagonutrition.com/podcast. And we'd love to look at your question and hopefully feature it on an episode. So good morning, Mark.
Hey, good morning. How are you? We're coming off a little trip to Colorado, huh? I can't believe you can even stand to be in a virtual call with me after spending 7 days together.
It was a great trip.
Yeah, it was a fun time up in the mountains. So we got all our families together. First time all 19 of our immediate, on our side of the family, our immediate family members with my parents, the four siblings, the spouses, and the 9 total grandkids. Yeah. Right? So there was 10. So there was 19 total. It was a lot of fun. We did a lot of stuff, a lot of hiking, did a train ride, gold mine tour, played some soccer, hung out on the patio a lot, just walked around the mountains. We were in Keystone, Colorado. So it was beautiful. It's fun. It's good to be back though.
Yes. Yes. I'm excited to hear from you today because you were doing a little different routine, morning routine as everyone else in the mountains. So I think you're going to tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, there's a little backdrop to this. And so I'll kind of start with my personal history with it, which is not long. I'm, 42 years old. And yeah, I wish I had figured this out at 22 or 32, but here I am. And so we're recording this or releasing this in August of 2023. And in mid-December of 2022, so as people may or may not know, we both have full-time careers, so we don't run Imago full-time. Mid-December is when I typically have to take off about 2 weeks because I get stored up vacation time and I have to use it or lose it with my full-time career, which I'm very grateful for. And so about mid-December, I come up on those needing to take off about 2 weeks to finish out my vacation time. And so mid-December, for a couple months prior to that too, I'd just been kind of, I'm someone with a lot of energy. I'm an extrovert. I like to, lift weights and play soccer and coach. And you would look at me and think, this guy's got a lot of energy all the time. I was still looking to kind of optimize that a bit and looking, I was feeling through those, into those winter months that I just didn't quite have the vitality that I wanted. And so I wanted to kind of, as I do with a lot of things in nutrition and in health, I like to test on myself first before I recommend it. And so, so I'm headed into this kind of 2 weeks of vacation time, mid-December. And again, wasn't really experiencing the vitality that I've really got or desired or come to become accustomed to over the years. And so I decided to start trying a few techniques from the neuroscience world. Okay. And so, this is a nutrition science or a nutrition podcast. And so if that's sort of our freeway, those are the lanes, this one's sort of like a frontage road. Okay. So it's kind of off and it's running alongside parallel to, kind of the main point of our content and our business, which is nutrition science. But the neuroscience stuff is really fascinating and it's been kind of a fun frontage road of study for me. And so all that's to say, some people listening might know Dr. Andrew Huberman. And so before I even start, I want to give credit to Dr. Andrew Huberman. He's a neuroscientist. He's a professor of neurobiology at Stanford University as part of School of Medicine. Long story short is I did my nutrition science certification program through Stanford Medicine, through the Stanford Center for Health Education. And of course, that's a part of Stanford University. And I studied under Professor Christopher Gardner. And so I had heard about Andrew Huberman back then, years ago, while doing that coursework at Stanford. But really what we've seen, I think in just the last year, maybe 2 years tops, Andrew Huberman, Dr. Huberman, has exploded on the scene. His podcast, which I highly recommend, just go scroll through the topics of his podcast. It's called Huberman Lab, H-U-B-E-R-M-A-N, Huberman Lab. Just scroll through the topics, absolutely fascinating topics, right? About productivity and dopamine and caffeine and sunlight and all these different things that interact with the neurobiology component. And so shout out to Dr. Huberman. If you're listening to this, oh my gosh, I can't believe you're listening to our podcast. But just absolutely fascinating topics, fascinating mind, no pun intended, just an incredible, I think, professor. And Time Magazine just recently wrote an article on him, I think in June of this month or of this year, 2023. And it was titled something like How Andrew Huberman Got America to Care About Science. And it's such a perfect title if you've been following him, because there's just something about the way that Dr. Huberman communicates that is so powerful. It's simple. He's all about bringing free scientific tools to, you know, to people, which we're about too. We're trying to distill all this research and all this nerd stuff over here into like, but what do I do with that in my daily life? And so he's done a really good job. And so I think a lot of what I really appreciate about him is hopefully what we're trying to accomplish on the nutrition science side of things, he's doing with the neuroscience side of things. Okay. Because neuroscience may sound like this huge nebulous, oh my gosh, PhDs and doctors and scientists. But at the end of the day, what does it all mean for us, right? Day-to-day folks. So all that's to say, huge shout out to Dr. Huberman. Check out the Huberman Lab podcast. Just fascinating long form content. And by the way, if you think I'm long winded, right? Like his podcasts, they average 2 to 3 hours.
Okay. Oh, wow.
So it is in depth, but if you've got like a commute, you've got a road trip, I mean, it's like half of an audiobook to get through a topic with him, but I think you're going to appreciate how he does it, how methodically he goes through this. So anyways, all right. I could keep gushing all day and turn this into a 2 or 3 hour podcast, just talking about Dr. Huberman. But all that's to say, the credit is to him. So again, back in mid-December, I had started listening to some of the things that, you know, I had seen from him or heard from him, and I decided to try it out. So I'm fresh off working my full-time career. I've got 2 weeks of vacation. I'm like, I need to do something. I'm going to lift weights, play some soccer, play with the kids, do family stuff. But I sort of want to find some optimizations with some of my own health. So all that's to say, I call, again, it's a credit to Dr. Huberman. I call this what I'm about to explain, the morning trifecta, okay, or the morning neuroscience trifecta. There's three things that I began doing in mid-December. Now, here's the big caveat. So it's mid-December. I stop working full-time, which means I'm waking up whenever I want, doing kind of whatever I want throughout the day. My routine's a little different. I'm not going, you know, to the office. I'm not working full-time necessarily. And immediately these three things had a huge impact, but I was a little skeptical. I'm like, but is it the fact that I started doing this when I stopped working for 2 weeks, right? Is that why I just feel different? Because I'm not working full time currently. So I was like, all right, well, I'm going to at least do this into January when I go back to the office and keep working. I want to see if these things really do ring true once I layer back in that full time work component, which I think, you know, we can all appreciate in terms of testing and controlling certain variables, right? When you're doing things. And lo and behold, it's again, we're releasing this in August. I have not stopped. I have no plan on stopping these three things, okay, in my own life. And this was kind of catapulted. I was on a call yesterday with a nutrition client, and she and her husband's not a client, she is, but they have been doing this morning trifecta for, I think, over a month now. And they were also in my class that I taught at church recently. And she was absolutely gushing about the personal impact. And I know these are anecdotes. I'm an anecdote. She's an anecdote. And so I want people to, you know, try this. If they're comfortable, try this on their own. But we do see it baked into research. We do see it baked into neurobiology, ophthalmology. And so all that's to say, again, if our lane is nutrition science, if our listeners will allow us, I want to just get off on a frontage road. We're still going to be traveling down this road toward health and vitality. But as you set up, this is really about some neuroscience, three neuroscience tricks, if you will, tips to increase energy, focus, alertness, prime your body to foster better sleep. It's just an incredible little cocktail of three neuroscience methods, I should say, for increasing those things. So with that, does that make sense? Does that sound mm-hmm. weird? I know we haven't talked about this in depth, so I know you're kind of wading into this a bit with a blind spot too, but you saw it in Colorado, right? So you're mm-hmm. like, I wake up and immediately is out on the back patio. What was I doing? Everyone's drinking coffee. Well, not everyone, but most people are drinking coffee right away. Not me. Why? You know, why did I stop at a certain time when they kept drinking it? You know, that sort of stuff. And so all that's to say, there's three things. And before we get into that, did I set it up? Any questions you have about kind of why this topic is, I'm passionate about this topic or why we're jumping into this?
No, I'm excited. I feel like my energy level wanes after lunch and I have never mm-hmm. really kind of figured it out. I've kind of wanted to like delay my coffee until lunch and see if I can still go to sleep mm-hmm. at night. And, so far, the times I've tried it, I haven't had as much caffeine in the morning. Well, I'll have zero or very little in the morning and then have it at lunch, see if that helps. It hasn't, thankfully, really hurt my sleep. But yeah, so keep talking. I'm listening.
Sweet. Well, and there's a couple. So the third one is we're going to talk about caffeine. So we'll talk about that one, which will be, I think that really kind of rounds out what you're talking about there. But so hopefully this is, I'm going to try to make this as easy to understand as possible. I'm not going to get too technical. Dr. Huberman does that. So you could find any of these topics in depth with him. He's going to go into a far more robust explanation of this. I'm going to give you sort of the practical outcome that I've been implementing. It was just with some thoughts as, again, I've been doing this now for, you know, 7, 8, 9 months, whatever it is. So number one, so if we're talking about a morning trifecta, again, that's my label, not Dr. Huberman's, but the morning neuroscience trifecta. Number one is sunlight viewing. Okay. And so I'm going to kind of break it each into three parts, the what, the why, and the how. Okay. So what is sunlight viewing? Very simply, it's viewing sunlight within an hour of waking or within an hour of the sun rising. Okay. So if you're listening to this, you're like, I'm up before the sun, Mark. I've worked with construction workers, right? For nutrition science, as a nutrition coach. And, you know, they're at the job site sometimes. They've been up for 2.5 hours before the sun even gets up, especially in the winter months, right? And so all that's to say, we want to view sunlight within an hour of waking or within an hour of sunrise. Okay. This helps align. So sort of the why would I do this? What's the point of this, Mark? This helps align the body's circadian rhythm, which is the body's internal clock, which is on a 24-hour cycle, right? It helps align the circadian rhythm. And it actually can help set your body to fall asleep about 14 to 16 hours later. Okay. One way to remember this is the first thing you can do when wake up is already begin prepping your body to go to sleep. Okay. It's one of the first things. Helps align your body helps align your circadian rhythm. You can also view sunset as well. I've just started doing that as well when I have time. I'm not always free when the sun is setting, especially with coaching coming up, this, that, and the other. But also being outside when the sun sets also helps with this, okay? So sets your body to fall asleep 14, 16 hours later. And this one seems peculiar because a lot of times we hear about cortisol and we think about it negatively. Cortisol is simply a stress hormone. Sunlight viewing first thing in the morning actually can increase cortisol by 50%. And that is a good thing first thing in the morning. Okay. What we don't want is to be peaking cortisol later in the day because that then sets up our body to not be able to fall into deep rest later or into deep sleep. So we actually want to peak our cortisol first thing in the morning so that it can more naturally taper off throughout the day, which again, transient stress is good, right? Like lifting weights creates stress. Cardio training creates stress. There are certain things that create transient stress that goes away. And this reaction of cortisol is transient. So it's going to peak in the morning and then again, more naturally taper off. That in and of itself also, again, from a neurobiology perspective, sets your body to fall asleep and stay asleep and sleep deeper, which is really powerful. Okay. So again, helps align with circadian rhythm, sets your body to fall asleep 14 to 16 hours later, can increase cortisol up to 50%, which then can help naturally taper throughout the day. So that's the what, that's the why. And then here's the how. No surprise, the ideal scenario is to go outside winter months, summer months, spring months, fall months, and to face eastward. Now, I have to say this, don't stare at the sun. Okay. So don't look up and hold your eyes open and say, oh, this, I just heard this podcast and this is a guy from Stanford, so I must go stare at the sun first thing tomorrow. Don't do that, but you do want to generally be facing eastward. Okay. And, the ways to think about how long to do this, we're just going to break into three categories. If it's sunny, just the sun is out bright and shining, you can do this in about 5 to 10 minutes. Okay. So if it's sunny, 5 to 10 minutes, which by the way, we know on the nutrition science side of things, this also helps our body then start to synthesize vitamin D, right? And so this also has that benefit, because vitamin D can be sometimes particularly hard to source through nutrition. And, you know, the sun doesn't give you vitamin D, but what it does is it helps your body manufacture vitamin D. And so, and it's about the same. If it's sunny, it's about 5 to 10 minutes. You need to start activating that vitamin D synthesis. So if it's sunny, it just takes about 5 to 10 minutes. Okay. If it's cloudy, you know, those days where the sun is peeking behind the clouds, but then coming out and going behind the clouds and coming back out. So it's still bright when the sun is out, but it goes behind clouds, just about 10 to 20 minutes. Okay. Of that. And if it's overcast, okay, this is the question I've gotten the most since talking about this is, well, what do I do if the sun's not out? Well, if it's light outside, the sun is out, right? And so the sun is out if it's not dark, okay? And those rays are still coming through, though it's overcast. So yes, the sun is out. Don't think on an overcast day, well, I can't do my sunlight viewing. You can. It's not shining bright outside, but the sun is up. And then so if it's overcast, it's just 20 to 30 minutes. Okay. And so again, sunny, just 5 to 10 minutes, cloudy, 10 to 20 minutes, overcast, 20 to 30 minutes. So the first thing that I like to do personally, I wake up, I get my yogurt bowl or my oat bowl, whatever I'm having for breakfast. I grab the dog. We go out to the back patio. We're fortunate. We live in Tennessee, which is technically part of the Sun Belt. So most of the time I've got access to the sun. And so I go out on the back patio. I turn my chair. I face it eastward and I eat my breakfast. I enjoy my breakfast out while I'm getting my sunlight viewing, sipping on water, eating my breakfast, getting that sunlight viewing first thing in the morning. So that's number one. Number one is sunlight viewing. Any thoughts on that, Danielle? Caveats, questions, considerations?
So what if it's not within the hour of waking? Because this morning I ate breakfast with the kids at the breakfast table and then took them to summer camp and then came back and did my quiet time outside.
You're never going to be able to fall asleep now. No, I'm just kidding.
I'm just curious.
Yeah. These things are always general practice. And so in general, as soon as you can, keep in mind that, you know, even just going outside, driving them down the street, you know, you're still getting sunlight, you know, whether it's through a window, whether it's through a windshield. I also heard someone recently ask Dr. Huberman, what's the worst thing you could do in the morning? So what's the antithesis of this? What's the other end of the spectrum? The worst thing you could do is wake up, keep the shades closed, get on your phone, lay there in bed for an hour, start doom scrolling, you know, on social or something like that. So those are kind of the extremes. You know, there's the ideal, but then there's the ideal worst scenario. And so if you're getting outside and driving and traveling and, you know, you've got a commute, that is still far superior to sitting in a dark room in the morning. Okay.
Yeah,
so yeah, just as soon as possible is really the idea. And think about your habits and think about how you might be able to slowly work this into a new routine over time. You know? So yeah, it doesn't mean that it's like, oh, sorry, kids are going to be late to school. I'm not done with my sunlight viewing. No, definitely go take care of the practical things of life, but just kind of know that that's the ideal. The ideal is within an hour of the sun coming up or of waking. If it happens to be an hour and a half or 2 hours, that's okay. That's better than not doing it, if you will.
Well, I think I would get like Mom of the Year award if I served my children breakfast outside. They would love that. They would so love that. I mean, sometimes I do runs in the morning. I don't always exercise in my basement, but yeah, when I really enjoy to be outside in the morning. So fun. I love it.
It's very good. There's a lot of fascinating things about that. And again, credit to Dr. Huberman for kind of opening up this world to me. So it sounds kind of weird and hippie, you know, sort of like, oh, sunlight, you know, in the morning. And I've always known it from the vitamin D perspective, but it's just really great. Cause keep in mind, your eyes are actually extensions of your brain, They're literally part of your brain. And so that's what starts to activate, again, some of these neurobiological considerations, which is really cool. So, so that's number one, sunlight viewing. Ideally, first thing in the morning, within an hour, you know, with those time parameters given. So that's number one is sunlight viewing. Number two, cold water immersion. This one is tougher. Okay. So what we mean by cold water immersion, and if you're on TikTok, you have likely seen this, you know, kind of cold water immersion is all the rage right now. Whether it's tubs, whether it's cryo, whether it's shower, there's a couple different ways to do it. But very practically, what I think almost everyone has access to is a shower. So we'll kind of use that as our example today, right? So what is cold water immersion? What do I mean by that? Do I mean I have to find a pool? Do I have to find a tub? It's very simply and generally immersing yourself in uncomfortably cold water up to the neck. Doesn't mean you can't do your head as well if you want to. Up to the neck, however, right? For 1 to 3 minutes. Okay. So 1 to 3 minutes per day of immersing yourself. And the key word here is uncomfortable, not dangerous, but uncomfortably cold water up to the neck for 1 to 3 minutes. Now, I should preface this. If you have a heart condition, based on some of what we're going to talk about, the reasons why we're doing this, if you have a heart condition, definitely check with your doctor before doing this. Okay. Because we're going to throw a couple, reactions into the body here that you might want to discuss with your doctor. Okay. So what is it? It's immersing yourself up to the neck in uncomfortably cold water 1 to 3 minutes a day. So why? Number one, this increases what's known as brown fat thermogenesis. Okay. Won't go into all that, but this again increases brown fat thermogenesis and can boost core body metabolism. Okay. So this is one of the things that you can do to, in a transient way, it doesn't mean your metabolism is higher forever, but you can increase metabolism immediately first thing in the morning or after your sunlight viewing. Okay. So increases brown fat thermogenesis, can boost core body metabolism for a period of time. And then perhaps even more profound is that this causes a significant release in epinephrine, which is adrenaline, and noradrenaline, which this increases your energy, alertness, and focus. Okay. So we were just on a road trip, right? So we drove to Colorado and there was a time where, you know, we're driving down the road and someone, you know, pulls in front of me, hits their brakes, and I've got to react. I've got kids in the car. I've got to, you know, am I swerving? Am I braking? This, that, and it ends. And when you're on that, you know, when you're on a road trip, I'm at least very conscious of my energy levels, right? Am I draining? How am I doing? I've been sitting a long time and I could just feel, of course, that surge of adrenaline. And suddenly I was really, really awake. It was not coffee. It wasn't an energy drink. What was happening inside me when that happened that alerted my body to suddenly have this vitality, this energy, this alertness, this focus, right? It was adrenaline. Okay. And that's a good thing. So you can purpose to utilize adrenaline through cold water immersion. Okay. So it releases significant amounts of, again, adrenaline, noradrenaline. It can also, it causes a release in dopamine, and this can elevate your mood. Okay. So dopamine is a reward chemical. Obviously it's a pleasure. It works on the pleasure reward center side of the brain. And so this can also elevate your mood. So it's hard to think about a cold shower being good for your mood, but I'm telling you, if you take me up on this challenge, it's not like a challenge, but if you were to just try these three things for 7 days, I think you're going to see some profound impact. Okay. So that's kind of the why, you know, the thermogenesis, the metabolism, the release of adrenaline, and the release of dopamine from just 1 to 3 minutes. Okay. So how to do this? Again, I mentioned there's several methods. There's ice baths, there's tubs, there's cryo, but probably in my experience, probably 100% of the people listening to this have access to a shower and you don't have to do anything different. Okay. You don't have to buy anything. You don't have to go to some place to get cryo or anything like that. Okay. So what I recommend is trying this in the shower. Okay. And so I do this again. After my sunlight viewing, I then go, after I'm done with my breakfast, I go to take my shower, I get in. And the principle that Dr. Huberman uses is this: you should be thinking to yourself, this is really cold and I want to get out, but I can stay in safely. Okay, so that's the idea. So what is cold? Change is different for every person. Now there's dangerously cold, of course. We don't want to cause you know, anything dangerous in this environment. But you should be saying, this is really cold. I want to get out, but I can safely stay in. And I'll tell you, the water in Colorado, when I was doing this in the morning in Colorado, much colder out the gate than here in Tennessee, right? And so even then I had to kind of adjust. And you can challenge yourself. Start with it being cool and then just get a little chillier as you build this into your routine, okay? So all that's to say, in the shower scenario, let's talk about real quick, just kind of four ways that you can do this. I've done all four. I'll tell you which one I prefer, but I have used all four in different scenarios. Number one, you can make this your entire shower. Even ladies, you can shower in 3 minutes. Okay. Okay. So 1 to 3 minutes, this could be your entire shower. That's the first way you could do it. And by the way, you might save money on your water bill. Okay. Cause you're going to want to get out in 3 minutes. You're like, I'm going to get in, get soaped, get shampooed and get out. You might even save some money. So that's a freebie. You're welcome. Okay. So you could do the entire shower. And so you can just start cold and end cold within 1 to 3 minutes. I typically am doing that. Okay. I'm typically now just doing a 1 to 3 minute cold shower in the morning and then I'm done. Okay. But it's the summer right now. And so we'll see come winter. Okay. The other way to do this, number two, is to start cold and go warm. Okay. So you can start cold for 1 to 3 minutes and then you can turn it warm and kind of finish your shower and rinse off so that you don't have that cold water on your skin as you're exiting the shower. The second way is to start warm and then go cold at the end. I did use that when I was in Minnesota for spring break. So it's still very cold up there in March. There was a ton of snow and I would wake up and I was like, there's just no way I'm starting with a cold shower. So what I would do is I would start warm. Then I would turn it cold. You know, once I was in and kind of acclimated, then I would go cold for 1 to 3 minutes at the end. So that's the third way to do it. And then fourth is what I call the sandwich method. Of course, you can start warm, go cold, and then finish warm. Okay. So you can start warm, get acclimated, get in there, go cold for 1 to 3 minutes. And then again, you can go warm and just sort of rinse it off. I like to just sort of rinse it off, you know, again, the cold water at the end. If I'm using something like the sandwich method, or if I'm going from cold to warm. So again, in the shower, you can do it the entire 1 to 3 minutes. Just make that your whole shower. You can start cold, go warm. You can start warm and go cold. You can start warm, go cold, and finish warm. All right. So cold water immersion, again, for the purposes of thermogenesis, metabolism, adrenaline release, dopamine release. This is a way that you can really increase energy, alertness, focus. And by the way, that adrenaline release is profound and it's hours. That dopamine release can last for hours. Okay. So we're not just talking about, oh, I felt good for 20 minutes and now it's 9 o'clock and I'm just kind of back to normal. It has lasting impact. Okay. So thoughts on that? Anything I need to clarify?
No, that's what questions? I was going to ask. How long it lasts. So
yeah. And it depends on the person. It depends on the release, you know, not everyone releases dopamine the same. Not everyone releases adrenaline the same. But it absolutely lasts for hours. Okay. So it's pretty incredible when you do it. And again, this isn't hooey. It's not witchcraft. This is just baked into our neurobiology. Right. So we're pulling levers with some of these chemicals, some of these reactions, in a profound yet simple way. Mm-hmm. All right. So that's number two. So number one, sunlight viewing within an hour of waking up or an hour of the sun coming up. Cold water immersion is number two for 1 to 3 minutes. And then number three is caffeine delay. And so we alluded to this at the beginning. This is something that I have done wrong all of my adult life, basically, since I started drinking coffee. I think I started drinking coffee right after I got back from overseas with the military. So I got back in 2006. Went back to my corporate job. And I think that's when I started drinking coffee. So I'm 42 now. So I've been drinking coffee since 2006. It's 2023 right now. Do the math. I can't. and so however long that is, and I've been drinking coffee, or caffeine in general, however you intake or ingest your caffeine, this applies to that, not just coffee. I've been doing entirely wrong up until mid-December. Okay. So let's talk about what this means. So what's caffeine delay? What this means is that you delay consuming caffeine in any form or in any drink, I should say, caffeine, no matter how you ingest it, no matter the mode, caffeine delay up to 90 to 120 minutes from when you wake up. Okay. So a lot of us wake up, make that coffee, pour that coffee, and we love that, right? And this was a hard thing for me to let go of because I loved the morning routine. I loved waking up, pouring that coffee, And just that's how we start. The house is quiet a lot of times, right? We're just spending some time with our coffee. So the thought of waiting an hour and a half, 2 hours is daunting for a lot of people. But I want to walk you through why it's actually quite detrimental for energy and sleep long term. Okay. So what is it? It's delaying your caffeine intake for 90 to 120 minutes. Why? Real quick, and this is just a primer. Try not to get into it too nerdy. But number one, keep in mind that caffeine does not give you energy. It does not give our body energy. It simply blocks our brain from feeling tired. Okay, so those are not the same thing. Giving you energy and blocking the feeling of being tired is not the same. So caffeine is what's known as an adenosine receptor antagonist. Okay, so it blocks the adenosine receptor. I'll just briefly explain what that means. So as the brain naturally produces more adenosine throughout the day or throughout the night, a person's need for sleep increases. Okay, so adenosine gets built up in the body, and that signals to the brain as it reaches sort of peak and it gets to a high elevation, we need to go to bed. We need to sleep. Okay, so here's the thing. When we wake up, we have had this adenosine build up in our body throughout the night. And so what we want to do is we want to allow that adenosine to wear off naturally. Okay, here's why. Let me start by saying this. So if you wake up and your body is signaling to your brain, we are tired, we are tired. When you first wake up, you've got that groggy feeling, right? That's the effect of the adenosine telling your brain that we are tired, we're tired, we're tired. You're coming out of sleep, but you're still tired because it has built up in your system. What caffeine does is it comes in and it blocks that adenosine from the adenosine receptor. Maybe a poor analogy is like, it's like trying to deliver mail to a mailbox that won't open. Okay. So what caffeine does is it closes that mailbox and the mail is trying to get delivered, but it can't. Now that mail isn't going to disappear on its own until it's received. So it goes back to the mail house and it will continue to try to deliver that mail until that mailbox is open. Okay. So what happens is we wake up generally and we start blocking the adenosine receptor. Then what happens is that naturally wears off, caffeine wears off. And that adenosine floods our brain later in the afternoon. That's the afternoon crash. Okay. So this adenosine needs to wear off. We want it to wear off naturally. Okay. And so 90 to 120 minutes after waking, our body can process and receive and clear that adenosine naturally. We don't want to impede that process. Okay. So all that's to say, when that antagonist wears off, right? Then we have this crash in the afternoon. So if you're someone that struggles with that afternoon crash, this is the technique to reduce, if not eliminate that. I know exactly what you're talking about. In the corporate world, we call it the 2:30 crash. And what most people do is they chug another cup of coffee, right? So while my energy's low, time to get more caffeine back in. And we'll talk about why that's not appropriate either. So anyways, all that's to say, we want to delay 90 to 120 minutes to allow the adenosine to clear naturally. Then we can insert caffeine, and I am telling you, you will get more benefit from less caffeine if you do this, okay? I get more benefit from one tall glass of coffee now, I do iced coffee, than I used to from two or three, okay? And again, that's a little money-saving tip, okay? So wait 90 to 120 minutes, allow your body to clear that adenosine naturally, and then consume your caffeine. Now, one caveat, if you're someone that wakes up early and does a workout, you are totally free. I mean, you're free to do whatever you want. You're a human being. You're an adult. I don't have any control of your life. However, you are totally free to consume some caffeine before you work out if you have an early workout. Okay. Why is that? That workout is going to work through that adenosine on its own. So if you like caffeine before an early morning workout, feel free to have that. Okay. Cause you're going to clear that adenosine via the workout, if that makes sense. In fact, I had one recent client who asked me about this specifically. He does do early morning workouts. And so for him, he asked exactly that. He's like, okay, I'm all in on this morning trifecta, but what do I do with like this really early morning workout? I was like, do you like caffeine before you work out? He goes, yeah, it really helps. I said, great. You know, do some before and do some after, just split it in half. And he's like, oh, it's perfect. And that worked for him. Okay. So all that's to say, that's a caveat. All right. So that's the why. So again, the what is delay caffeine 90 to 120 minutes. Why? Because caffeine is an adenosine receptor antagonist. We want to allow that adenosine to clear on its own. Okay. And we want to avoid this afternoon crash that comes from blocking the adenosine too early, allowing it to stay stored up and then rush our brain hours later. And then, of course, we run to coffee and the vicious cycle continues. So how do I do this? Very simple. Number one, take note of when you wake up and wait 90 minutes. Okay. So just wake up. If you wake up at 6, great. 7:30, I can start. Okay. If I like. And by the way, full confession, I wait exactly 90 minutes. I'm still at that point where I am waiting and cannot wait for 90 minutes to hit. But there have been a couple days where I'm like, oh, shoot, it's already been like 2 hours and 15 minutes and I didn't even realize. And so I am someone that loves to just kind of stick to that 90 minutes. That gives me just a time frame. It can definitely be more than that, obviously 90 to 120. Okay. And so take note of the time and just delay it appropriately. Okay. 90 to 120 minutes. Now let's talk about a couple other quick optimizers for caffeine. The other thing I would point to is delay caffeine. The other thing I would say is you want to finish consuming caffeine by late morning. Okay. For me, this is about 11 o'clock. That's sort of the number I've put into this. I try to be done by 11 o'clock. Do I always hit it exactly? Nah, sometimes it pushes a little more toward noon. Sometimes I'm done at 10:30. But here's why. Okay. Caffeine has what's known as a quarter life of 10 to 12 hours. Okay. What that means is that 10 to 12 hours after consuming caffeine, 25% of that caffeine will still be in your system. It will still be in your brain. Okay. So think about this. If you have 200 milligrams of caffeine at noon, 50 milligrams will still be in your system between 10 p.m. and midnight. This is what starts to impede deep sleep. And we really want to protect deep sleep. Okay. It's kind of like our not unofficial adage that I've used on like social media for us, which is like eat well, train hard, sleep deep, right? Eat well, train hard, sleep deep. This is something that can begin to impede that deep sleep is consuming too late in the afternoon, right? So again, what if you had like 200 milligrams at 2 p.m., which some people are like, man, that's just the afternoon, just getting started. That's so far from sleep. But that means then that there's 50 milligrams in your body between 12 a.m. and 2 a.m. Okay. That quarter life is about 10 to 12 hours. So we want to finish consuming by late morning. And I leave that term sort of vague. Just work that into your natural, whether that's 10, 11. For some people that get up super early, like 9:30, it's like late morning for them, you know, and they get off at 3, you know, got early jobs. And so contextualize that for yourself, but know that you want to generally finish consuming caffeine by late morning. The next one is to consume. So we've got delay caffeine 90 to 120 minutes, finish consuming by the late morning. And then this one crushes a lot of hopes and dreams as well. And so consuming 1 to 3, but again, I think you're going to get more out of less caffeine if you take these steps. Okay. So this isn't about just drinking less caffeine. It's actually about getting more out of less caffeine. Those things are not the same. So consuming 1 to 3 milligrams per kilogram of body weight appears to be in the research optimal. Okay. So what does this mean? 1 to 3 milligrams per kilogram of body weight. So real quick, if you're taking notes, to convert your body weight, just take your body weight in pounds and then multiply it by 0.4535. Okay. So right now I'm about 179 pounds. And so when I multiply that by 0.4535, and you can round down or up, I'll round down. It's basically I'm 81 kilograms. Okay. So take your kilograms. Obviously you just multiply that by 1. So that's just the same number. And then multiply that by 3, and that's your range. So again, if I'm 81 kilograms, which I am currently, the low end of my caffeine consumption is 81 milligrams. And then 81 times 3 is 243. So my window of intake or my range of caffeine intake is between 81 and 243 milligrams. Okay. So that's what I do. And even on this road trip, I was very cautious. I had like one coffee drink and I found out it only had like in the morning on the road, it only had like 75. And I admit I went a little over. So I had one drink that had 75 milligrams. And then like 4 or 5 hours later, we were at the gas station. I'm like, I need another one, but it can't be like 250 or 300 milligrams. So I found one that was 200. So yeah, I had 275. Nothing happened, you know, but I was still trying to keep it close to that range. And that's an extreme scenario. I'm not always on a road trip, but So all that's to say, caffeine delay 90 to 120 minutes. Finish consuming by late morning. Consume 1 to 3 milligrams of caffeine per kilogram of body weight. And I'm telling you, folks, when you put these three things to the test, I've been telling clients about this. I've been talking about this with friends. Again, credit to Andrew Huberman. I did not come up with this. I've been telling friends about this. I've become an evangelist for this, not only with clients, but friends and family. I have not had a single person. Now, this is an anecdote, but I've not had a single person come back and say that they feel the same or worse. Every single person has felt better, and most of them have felt profoundly better. Okay. And so all that's to say, sunlight viewing in the morning, cold water immersion, and caffeine delay is what I call the morning trifecta. All right. So thoughts on that in terms of caffeine, sleep, or the whole package, Daniel?
No, it's good. I was wondering kind of when the cutoff for the caffeine would be. So, and I like how you gave how many milligrams to reference to. You never know how much. And just for a reference, you know, like one cup of coffee has 95 milligrams of caffeine. And if you kind of look up your favorite mode of caffeine, you can see, you know, black tea has a little less, green tea has a little less than that. So some people it's, you know, soda has, I think, probably a little bit about the same as black tea, I think is
right.
So yeah.
Yeah. Just to give some ranges and, you know, and do the work, figure out again, I love that point too. It's like, what do you like to like? Dr. Huberman loves yerba mate. I've never had a yerba mate in my life, to be honest. And I'm just a coffee guy. I drink black coffee with ice in the morning. That's it. And so find out what your caffeine intake is, right? That's the good thing. You can dig into it a little bit. And this is back to kind of the nutrition. This is something that we're putting into our body, right? And so this is about your intake, whether you're doing that via soda, whether you're doing that via coffee or mate, tea, et cetera. And so all that's to say, this really helps optimize and I believe get more out of a morning routine that's going to set your body up for that increased energy, focus, alertness, mood, even, you know, that dopamine release. And this all sets your body up early to have sustained, prolonged energy and focus throughout the day, which is profound, but it's also setting you up for sleep. And we know that ultimately the best thing you can do for your energy, the two best things you can do for your energy, I would say, is deep sleep and proper nutrition. Okay, because calories literally are units of energy. So that'll be a different podcast episode about optimizing nutrition for energy, et cetera. But all that's to say, these are some of the neurobiological considerations. And again, I tried to package it into something that you can remember: morning trifecta, sunlight viewing, cold water immersion, and caffeine delay. And I challenge you, if you're listening to this and you're up for the task, try this for a week. Try it for a month, whatever you think you can do it, try it. And be sure to let us know, and send us an email. You know, I could do our outro for us if you want, Danielle, because pretty much wrapping up, but would love you to like drop a review if you tried this on this episode. Let us know if you've tried one or two or all three of these and how you felt, before you started implementing these and then after. We'd love to hear from you in that regard, or just go on our website, imagonutrition.com, and just contact us and shoot us a note and be like, I'm not going to be a client, but just wanted to let you know, thanks for the free podcast. I've been doing the trifecta and it's working, or I have a question about it. Just let us know. So all that said, if this has been helpful, we'd love for you to subscribe to the podcast. We love giving away this information for free. Again, thanks to Dr. Huberman for opening my eyes to this. It's been profound in my own life. And so I'm just hoping to be a conduit, and not a reservoir, obviously, for that information. And so, we'd love for you to subscribe, drop that review, let us know how you're doing. If you've got a friend that you want to share this with, we would love to help as many as people as possible with that. And if you're on social media, you can follow us. We are at Imago Nutrition. That is IMAGO Nutrition across all the major social media platforms, even Twitter, which is now called X as of last week. So, anyways, all that to say, thank you so much. And, thank you to Happy Pill, the band, for our theme song, Think About Food. We'll see you next time.